But okay, are you ready to go?
Yeah, are we doing Jim and the Holograms? Is that what I'm?
Yes, we are. So lately we've been doing shows from the 90s that I remembered from being the kid. This week it's a show from the 80s. It's a cartoon. And this is going to be a weird thing because I keep saying like I don't expect these shows to be good. And you never know. Like Erie, Indiana was pretty good. Parker Lewis Can't Lose, a little shaky. This is a weird case because I don't think Jem and the Holograms is going to necessarily be good, for adults to watch now in the modern era. But the thing that got me thinking about Jem, what gave me the idea to watch it this week, is because, well, basically, in the 80s, it was kind of nice in a way that they had shows so clearly delineated between boy shows and girl shows. Like nowadays, they just don't do that. Like shows are very gender neutral. They're for everybody, which is also nice in its own way. But the thing that was nice about The Division is this was made by the same company and the same team that made G.I. Joe and the Transformers. Those were their boy shows. I mean, G.I. Joe, you can't get more boy than that. So by splitting it, you get these extremely girl-based shows. Like Jem and the Holograms is basically like if Barbie had a band. And it's kind of neat because you don't really get that anymore. Even stuff like My Little Pony and stuff is very gender neutral now. So it's kind of neat to go back to these shows that were just like, this is for girls. But even though it was for girls, I totally watched the crap out of this show. And what I remember most about it is because it was about a band, is the music. The music in this show is awesome. So basically, that's the tack I'm going to take this week is I was listening to Jem and the Holograms music, kind of remembering, the olden days. And I picked two episodes of the show because I found what I think is there's two bands. There's Jem's band, the I guess they're called the Holograms, Jem and the Holograms. And then
That's
there's
it.
the evil band called the Misfits. I found the best Jem song and the best Misfits song. And I just wanted to see like, what are these songs like in the context of the show? I just wanted to watch those episodes. So I got those two episodes. So I figured we could check out the songs first and then watch the episode that the song is from. So, like I said, I mean, this might be a pretty, I don't know, this show might not be that good, but I can at least guarantee that the music is good.
So
So it won't be.
this is the early 90s, is it?
This one is actually the 80s, so yeah, I'll give you the quick rundown. Jem and the Holograms is an American animated musical television series that ran from 1985 to 1988, and it's described as a romance science fiction musical, which, I mean, that's a hell of a genre. It ran for 3 seasons with 65 episodes made by the same team as G.I. Joe and Transformers. As for the actual plot of the show, just reading it over, man, my brain was glazing over. Like, it's not that hard to follow in the show, but when you see it written out, it is so complicated. It's like this chick, her name is Jerrica. Her family ran a music business, and then they died and they left it to her, but only half to her and half to an evil businessman. So she's always fighting the evil businessman for control of her family's company. And of course, the evil businessman doesn't like her band. He likes the Misfits. So Jem has to fight the Misfits all the time. And not only that, but Jerrica's dad also left her a special sentient supercomputer or some crap that can turn her into Jem through the magic of hologram technology. No one knows that Jerrica and Jem are the same person. So that's where the sci-fi part comes in. But what I thought was more interesting is the music side. So the music side is Britta Phillips was the singing voice for Jem. There was a different person who did the acting and the singing. She'd never worked professionally as a singer. She was cast as the singing voice of Jem after obtaining an audition through her father, who worked on advertising jingles in New York. And her initial take from the audition was so good that they used it for the theme song of the show. And that theme song, like, that's basically what's been keeping Jem alive in my mind for the last 30 years. Jem, truly outrageous, truly, truly, truly outrageous. Whoa. It's like, it's so good. So first off, let's watch that. I've got everything lined up.
I'm just going to give you a
Sorry,
little historical significance. I was asking you if it was early 90s because the big news story at the end of this week was it's been 30 years since Kurt Cobain
Oh, yeah, that's right. As of our recording, that was today.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was that's why I was asking if it was early 90s to see if I could put it into that grunge genre, but I guess it's before grunge, right?
It would be this was
mid-80s. It would be definitely before grunge.
Yeah, this was actually the kind of thing that grunge kind of washed away. This is the hyper, how's a good way to describe it? Like hyper commercial music, you know, like, which is one thing for a cartoon, you know, it's kind of cool for the gem songs to be very polished and very slick and very catchy. But yeah, it is kind of nice that Nirvana came along and made actual music stop being like this because, you know, it was so obnoxious 80s music.
Although last weekend I listened to, I was in St. Andrews and there was no TV or anything, so I just had radio. There was a whole weekend of 80s music. That's all it was. And you know what? There was some damn good stuff on that thing.
Yeah, no, I do think, I think the 80s, to me, I do think it is the catchiest decade ever. You know, like the pop songs, the number one hits, the one hit wonders were all so, so catchy. Like whenever I imagine the radio, like it's the platonic ideal of the radio. Anything on the radio in the 80s was the catchiest song ever. But it did wear thin after a while. Even though I was a kid at the time, I was very ready for Nirvana to come along, and everybody else was too. Although even that, it's somewhat overstated because midway through the 90s, it just turned into the 80s part two. It was all Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys and fucking, I don't know, Mariah Carey and Garth Brooks. Like, it went right back. but at least for a few years, we got a reprieve.
All right, well, let's go back to your tale.
Yeah, so, well, let's. I've got these things lined up in the little listing for you. So before I go on, let's just take a brief moment to listen to Gem and the Holograms' opening theme song. This is the song that I've been humming in the shower for the last 30 years. And it's written by the same lady who wrote the Transformers theme. So, I mean, I'll get into her later, but talk about an MVP.
More than meets the eye.
Yeah, exactly, right? She's amazing. But also in this song, like, I think what's notable when they're saying how good Britta Phillips's performance was, I definitely agree. There's just something about this woman's voice. There's like, it's high pitched, but there's like a little bit of grit to it. She is just like a truly excellent singer. Just so good. So, yeah, let's just listen to that. So yeah, it's got that that earworm similar to the Transformers theme. It's so easy to remember. Gem, truly outrageous, truly, truly, truly outrageous. And then even when they throw in the mini song in there of the Misfits, we are the Misfits, our songs are better. It's like it all just stuck in my head effortlessly for my entire life. So to be honest, that's all I remembered about Gem, basically. And, you know, again, that's still all I remember. But I decided to go dig into the music. And let me tell you a bit about that. So the inclusion of music videos in Gem was a result of the success and popularity of MTV, which began airing 4 years prior. That kind of thing blows my mind because I was born in 79. To me, MTV and Much Music just always were there. It's weird to think of MTV just started. But of course it did. Before the 80s, there hardly even were music videos. So it's just funny that that's MTV was brand new. And they did not half-ass these songs at all. Of the, how many episodes did I say it was? 65 episodes, but each episode had 3 little tiny songs that are like about a minute or a minute and a half. So the show has a total of 187 little tiny music videos, 151 unique songs, because they did reuse the really good ones, with songwriters Ann Bryant and Barry Harmon writing them all. Yeah, and it's just really cool. Basically, I mean, this whole thing was just meant to sell toys the same way G.I. Joe and Transformers were, but they really put their back into this one. Like, they made just, Gem has so much more work put into it than your average 80s cynical cartoon that's just trying to sell stuff. And it worked for a while, but long story short, you know, its main competition was Barbie, and Jem just wasn't flexible enough. Jem can only be a singer, where Barbie can be anything, is already more established, and they just put out rock and roll Barbie, basically. They're like, hey, kids, you don't need Jem. Here, Barbie's a rock star now, and she works at the zoo, and she's a doctor, and she's a da-da-da-da. So basically, you know, Jem had a little run, but ultimately Barbie won. And that's the tale.
Barbie's kind of sickening, isn't it?
Yeah, and to this day, I mean.
I mean, Barbie came out when I was a kid, God's sake. I was about 8 years old when the first Barbies came out. And even then, I can remember we got a little doll. It was called the Debbie doll, which was smaller. And it was out just before Barbie. And she was only 8 inches tall. So Barbie came out the same year, I think, or maybe a few months later. And I remember going to school and you could take your doll. So I took my little Debbie doll. But somebody came with Barbie and she was 12 inches tall and long, thin legs. And ever since then, I've just been kind of like, yeah, Barbie, yeah. I don't believe all that shit. She could do everything. I don't buy that at all.
Yeah, it's kind of weird as a kid, again, you know, how I was saying the 80s was much more gender defined. So obviously He-Man and G.I. Joe was what I liked more. But there always were Barbie toys around. Someone's sister always had a Barbie. So it was weird as a guy because girls took care of their Barbies and had all their outfits for the Barbies. Whereas if we had like an extra Barbie that was just in a toy chest, it was always naked. It was just a naked Barbie. But it wasn't even like salacious or anything, you know, you just kind of look at it and Barbie and Ken are just these smooth things and you're just like, I don't know, it's just a weird toy, I don't know what to do with this. Let me just go back to G.I. Joe, you know.
I used to always find Barbies everywhere and they were always drawn on. Some kid had always, you know, you'd find Barbies in people's in toy boxes or in other people's houses or that, and Barbie always was drawn on with some markers.
Like drawn on what? Like, did they draw on like nipples and stuff, or what do you mean?
No. Just, you know, it would be younger kids, scribbled? Obviously. Just scribbled on them. They'd be drawn on the face and drawn on the rear end and just drawn on.
Yeah, it seems like that was the Barbie problem, was losing Barbie's clothes and outfits, where our problem on the guy side was that the G.I. Joe toys, they also started out bigger. And then by the time I came around, there was the small little G.I. Joe toys. But the to keep their legs connected to their torso was like an elastic inside. And the elastics kept breaking. So we just had all these G.I. Joes with legs that fell off or broken pelvises. It's like, it's the horrors of war.
And I used to try to re-elastic those things. There is no way you could ever get those legs tightened up again. They'd always be kind of flopping around.
So like I was saying, I found what I think is the best Jem and the best Misfits song. So I figured I'll play the song first and then we'll watch the episode that it comes from. And it was kind of neat while I was researching because I think I kind of did an okay job inadvertently. I just went with what I thought was the catchiest. There's this Jem song called Like a Dream that definitely stuck in my head. Like it feels like this almost could be a real 80s song. It's just that it's just a chorus. They just say the chorus over and over. It just never, because it's only a minute and a half long, so it's not built out to be a full song. But as I was doing a little research on the Jem Wiki, they have several songs that they use twice, but this is the only song that they used in all three seasons. This is like the primo Jem song. So I was like, oh, cool. I mean, maybe I'm just basic, but I picked the one that they used the most. So let's give that a quick play, Like a Dream, and then we'll watch the episode that it came from, which is season 1, episode 2, Disaster.
Show you new worlds to explore. Follow
So I guess before we put on the episode, what are your first impressions of my favorite Gem song?
Well,
yeah,
Lillian, earworm stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you got to put it in context too. I mean, this is, you know, a song that they want a 7-year-old girl in 1985 to like, you know.
A 7-year-old girl in 1985 would love this and love the song, love the action, love the characters in it, love the music.
I really do. I love that, just the way that lady sings. I looked up her, she's in a bunch of other bands and stuff too, but somehow it just seems better when it's Gem. But anyway, yeah, it clearly worked better for me because I fucking love that song. I just put it in my playlist with all my normal music and it would keep coming up. So that's what got me thinking of like, what is this? Who is she singing about? What is the context for this song? And that's why I thought, hey, we should watch that episode so I can finally learn what the Like a Dream song is even talking about.
I think I might like the song better if I hadn't been watching the video that attached to it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, watching these beautiful people just flying over rainbows and going down and finding jewels in the bottom of the ocean and all that, you know, come on. Personally, I'm not a big video fan with music. I think music should be able to stand on its own without having visuals attaching to it where you always connect the visual and the music. I think if music, if it's good, can stand alone. So I probably would have liked this song quite a bit better without seeing the visuals.
I think it's safe to say, too, because when I get to the Misfits after this, you may like the Misfits better, because that is one thing. If you go through all the songs, you just sit there and listen to 150 Gem songs, as I did for some reason, it does get, like, it's very cartoony, obviously. The Gem is the good band and the Misfits are the bad band. And some of those Gem songs, they really get cloying, where it's like songs about, you know, eradicating prejudice and bringing together the people of the world, and songs about stopping pollution, and songs about being proud to be American. And like, it does get pretty tiring. It's like, geez, Jim, will you shut up? Whereas the Misfits, we'll get to them after. Every Misfits song is about how I'm the best and everyone else can go to hell. So you might like the Misfits better, but we'll get to them after. For now, let's watch Jim and the Holograms, Season 1, Episode 2, Disaster.
Okay.
After her father died, Jerrica Benton inherited half of her father's music company, Starlight Music. Jerrica needs Starlight Music to run Starlight House, a foster home for girls. But Eric Raymond owns the other half of Starlight Music, and he refuses to give Jerrica the money she needs. No one suspects the mysterious Gem is actually Jerrica Benton, disguised by one of Synergy's holograms. But Starlight House was threatened when one of Eric's men accidentally started a devastating fire.
Did you notice that they weren't wearing those same clothes when they were singing their song?
No, I didn't notice.
They were wearing their regular clothes.
Continuity error.
To be continued. Oh, my God.
Gem will be right back after these messages.
So that is a pretty freaking weird show, man. That show is all over the place.
Definitely a kid show. It's not one of those shows that you look back and say, oh, my God, that had all kinds of levels on it. It appeals to adults, appeals to kids. That's definitely kid stuff.
Yeah, especially when, you know, they're trying to get the Misfits off their trail. Well, they turn their car through the magic of holograms into a dumpster. But even before that, where Gem makes a hologram version of herself that just runs off into the bushes and they chase her. You know, it's like so child level. It's like, go chase that person. You know? But at the same time, like the Misfits seem like they're just kind of, I mean, they even had that Making Mischief song. They're just putting cream pies in people's faces and they're kind of just goofing around. They're definitely assholes, but they're not like evil. But that guy who runs the record company or whatever, he burned down an orphanage and then he plants a bomb. And it's like, I wonder if that's to get like boys to watch it. It's like, some pretty extreme levels of crazy destruction and near murder. It's like, what the heck is that?
But even things like the bomb, like they could have hidden the bomb, you know. Obviously, if anybody had walked in that room, they would have seen it. It was stuck right out of the couch cushion. You know, there's little things like that, you know. They could, even though it was for kids, you don't need to make it that obvious unless you're playing to like a three-year-old or a four-year-old.
Yeah, I wonder if it's
for an older crew. I think it's geared for, you know, kids who would be 8, 9, 10, 11-ish.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think the music is really cool in this show, and I like the fashion. It's like how we were saying last week, how Parker Lewis is very 90s. This is very 80s, like really cool hair. Everyone has cool hair and cool dresses and cool style, like very visually cool show. But yeah, the writing is so super duper dumb that it makes me think of some stories came out about people who used to work on, I think it was He-Man specifically, or Captain N the Game Master. I don't know, these old shows of that era, that they literally would write 2 episodes a day in their writer's room. And that's insane. You know, even for a crappy kid show, you should put a little more work than that into it. So this has that feeling a bit of like, I don't know, he just puts the bomb under the couch cushion. You know, it's like the first draft of a first draft that nobody ever looked at again is how it feels.
If it didn't have the music going for it, it really would be pretty lame.
Yeah, and even that is a bit of a downer that I still don't understand the context of Like a Dream. What the heck was that? Like the orphanage burned down and they need somewhere for all the kids to go. So they're on their way to this mansion that they could conceivably win if they win a battle of the bands against the Misfits, but they haven't got it yet. But just in the middle of those two things, they just throw in the Like a Dream music video. But it wasn't them filming an actual music video. It wasn't relevant to the plot. At least the other songs were relevant to the plot. That one really didn't even... It's so weird that like the preeminent kind of best quote-unquote gem song didn't even fit at all. It just happened.
Pure filler.
Yeah, it's weird.
But even when the Misfits sang that song on the ship, as I told you, like they're flying around doing all these bad things on that boat. But they're wearing the original clothes that they wore, but they had gotten dressed up. Now, they could have at least, you know, made it fit there. They had gotten dressed up to go to that party. Then they started doing the Misfit things. They were all wearing their regular type clothes that they always wore. And then I thought, oh, I must have been mistaken. They must not have gotten dressed up for the party. But then later you see when the song is over, yes, they're wearing their fancy clothes. They did get dressed up for the party. You know, come on, that's pretty basic.
Yeah, I'm sure on that Gem Wiki, there's like trivia and stuff. So I'm sure the trivia entry for that episode, I'm sure, brings that up, that continuity error. But I guess at the time, they never thought anybody would ever see these things again. You know, they certainly didn't think people would be reviewing it chronically.
They filmed that song before that, and then they made the show, and they just put it in for filler show, for filler. It's the filler song that joins up what they're going to do. But obviously, that's what they did. They did the video of that song first before they did this show. But it's, as I always say, you know, they don't need to dumb it down for kids. Well, I think they kind of dumbed this one down.
That's interesting, though, because that still happens. Because, yeah, I'm sure the music video parts were probably much harder to animate than the rest of the show. So it makes sense that they would do them ahead of time. They still do that with those Marvel movies, since they're, you know, $100 million computer graphic movies. Is they start working on the big action scenes before they write the rest of the movie, apparently. So like if you watch a Spider-Man movie or whatever, there's like 3 big fight scenes and then they write the script and they're like, okay, we got a fight scene in Manhattan, we got a fight scene on a boat, and we got a fight scene on a space station, and now write a story that fits them all together. And remarkably, the Marvel movies, like they do a pretty good job of it, but that is apparently what they do just because they have to get started on the special effects like years early. so yeah, it's funny that even back in Gem days it was clearly the same thing. But that's still where, like, as evidently kind of low quality and lame as this show is, and how bad the writing is and how childish and silly it is, I still feel like it's like two sides of a coin, because at the same time the character designs are so cool and the fashion is so cool, and even that they change outfits, Like, they don't do that in any other cartoon. Scooby-Doo and the gang are not putting on different clothes ever. The Flintstones are never changing their clothes. The Simpsons don't even change their clothes, really. And the music videos, and that it's got all these songs. Like, not just one song, three songs per episode. So they still put way more work into this than your average show. But, yeah, they only used half their ass. They didn't use their whole ass because the other half of the show is really cheap and lame.
But a lot of that fashion stuff is probably with the idea, because it's Mattel, to sell product. I saw Mattel's name at the end of the thing. So you won't just get the Jim doll and her bandmates. You will get all, then you buy all that fashion accessory that would be, they'd say, from the TV show or from the orphanage burning episode. These are the fashion plates that, and then your parent would go out and buy you all those pieces of fashion to go so you could dress up your Jim dolls.
Yeah, it really is. That is a weird aspect, right? The toy side, because you remember I showed you that stuff from the Transformers movie where they gun down a bunch of Transformers and then Optimus Prime dies. They only did all that stuff so they could sell new toys. So yeah, I guess you can't just wantonly murder people in gems. So yeah, they just need to have different outfits. But one thing that was handy about that episode is it was a good introduction to the Misfits, because there was the Click Clash song that was like, here's Jem's wussy side and here's the Misfits' cool side. And then the Making Mischief song. It's neat too how like the two bands have a different style. Like the Misfits kind of sound more like Jerry Lee Lewis type of like 50s rock in a weird way. And well, let's just talk about them for a second. Obviously, it just makes no sense that you just have to battle this one band. Like, at least at this point, it's a battle of the bands. But later on, both bands are famous and well-known. And it's like, there's room for two bands, you know? The Beatles didn't have to fight the Rolling Stones. You can just be two bands. Pearl Jam didn't have to fight Nirvana. But these two bands are in constant battle, which is weird. But imagine if you're the Misfits. Like, obviously, they're jerks. But they are still motivated and talented, and they're actual, like, they're a band. They're equally as good as Jem, if not better. Imagine the existential crisis they would have if they ever learned that the reason they keep getting bested by Jem and the Holograms is because Jem has a magical hologram machine that can grant her every wish. Like, you've been struggling your whole life to become a famous musician, and you're just getting the floor mopped with you because this bitch has magic, and you couldn't even tell anybody. No one would believe you. Like, the Misfits are in a horrible situation.
I think you'd be a little pissed off.
Yeah, but I think it really would lead to, like you wouldn't even believe it was real. You'd be like, how is my life turned into this nightmare where, yeah, sure, I was a bit of a jerk. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have thrown a pie at somebody. Maybe I shouldn't have made mischief. But this lady can... like, she has the powers of a god.
Hey, she's fake.
Yeah, it's weird. So, and I mean, you know, I have some sympathy for the Misfits because just like with everything, the bad guys are always more interesting than the good guys. So let's move over to the Misfits. So Pizzazz is the singer of the Misfits. Her singing voice was done by Ellen Burnfield. And I got two Misfits songs because, I mean, I guess we've already had a little bit of an introduction to them, but I had to do two because these two songs are just like the quintessential explain the Misfits songs so well. So this first one, the runner-up song, is called I Am a Giant. So let's watch that first because it's such a perfect encapsulation of like what's going on in this lady's head, this megalomania she has that she just wants to be the most famous person in the world. And it's also an awesome song.
Giant.
Yeah, I love that song because especially with all of, you know, Jem's, oh no, we got to save the orphans and we got to save the earth and save the world and be nice. It's so, it's like refreshing. Even though I wasn't watching the episodes, I was just listening to the songs, just to cut through all of the ballads and the love songs and whatever. And just, I am a giant. I'm 20 stories tall. That is just like, yeah, that's cool. I love that band.
Yeah, I've got to say, I prefer that to the, like, I am a dream.
And I like, too, how, you know, Jem is like the platonic ideal of the perfect pop singer that, you know, you wish you sounded like that. And I like how this Ellen Burnfield lady, the way she sings those songs is kind of obnoxious, you know? It's like she's not as good of a singer as Jem, but it's almost like a Sex Pistols like thing. Like, I'll just get through on pure attitude. I don't need to be the perfect singer because I am a giant. You know, it's so cool. But then the main song I wanted to play is like, okay, I'm a giant. That's one thing. What if you were bigger than the entire universe? This is an extremely similar song, but taken to the next degree where she's basically like, I'm more important than reality itself. Like, this is beyond megalomania. This is so insane. And this is where it's called Universal Appeal. And this is where I was a little proud of myself that I picked the right song, because as I was researching, so Anne Bryant, like I said, she's the composer and songwriter and most known for composing the Transformers theme. But Bryant has stated on a few occasions that one of the songs she wrote for Jem, which she's most proud of, is Universal Appeal by the Misfits. And not to pat myself on the back, but I was like, yeah, I fucking nailed it, man. That's my favorite. Like, this is not only my favorite Misfits song. This is my favorite song of the whole series. So, yeah, Like a Dream Can Go to Hell. This is the song. So, yeah, let's listen to Universal Appeal and then watch the episode that it came from. So good. I love that damn song.
Very catchy. I'm surprised I haven't heard that lately in relation to this, like the big eclipse that's happening on Monday. We're having a big solar eclipse here in everywhere in the universe. And it only happens every 100 years. But what I heard the other day is, you must have heard this song by Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, about 2017, I think it was, there was a lunar eclipse, probably. Anyway, Bonnie Tyler's Total Eclipse of the Heart sales went way up, and they expect that with this one, it's going to go way up. But this song is even more eclipse-like. I mean, Total Eclipse of the Heart doesn't relate to a universal eclipse that this girl talks about. I'm surprised this song doesn't make it on the big sales.
Yeah, I guess it's just... Well, I mean, I didn't remember any of these either, except the theme song. I think the theme song is the only song that really gets remembered, because it's like, I guess because they had to write 150 songs, like these are like sketches of a song, you know, it's like a little tiny seed that isn't a real song. But I agree, this is a way cooler eclipse song, you know, for sure. And I like, too, just the music video of that one, because it deals with space stuff. It's the most Jem has ever looked like the Transformers. It really looks like the Transformers. But yeah, just, you know, it's just so, I mean, obviously the 80s was a bit more black and white, especially kids shows, the way things were written. But, I mean, it's weird to tie it into, like, Ayn Rand books or something. But It is interesting that like Jem is just pure selflessness all the time. Oh, just save the world, save the kids, save everything, blah, 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 blah. And she's the good guy. Whereas the Misfits are the bad guys, but that in my own mind's eye, I am the sky, so why should I be shy? That is like the best line in the world for like self-confidence and belief in yourself and wanting something.
Exactly.
And working
that's what
hard
I was
for
just
it.
Gonna say. If you're somebody who's suffering from like low self-esteem, and we're hearing all the time how youth suffers from low self-esteem, that's the kind of song that would really give you a boost of thinking, you know what? Hey, I'm pretty damn good. And you'd start feeling really good about yourself. Doesn't matter if it's sung by the bad guys.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the like mature adult way to approach life is like a nice mix of both. You know, obviously you don't just want to be crazily selfish. You got to, you know, but you got to look after yourself before you can look after someone else, you know? So, I mean, yeah, the Misfits, I definitely identify with them way more. And their songs are just cooler, you know? That's pretty indisputable. So let's check out the episode that came from, and hopefully it makes more sense than Like a Dream did. So this is, for anyone playing along at home, let me see, what is this episode?
Oh, so we're not seeing the continuation of the one that was to be continued?
Hell no, because I mean...
I'm crapping on the show, right? I was like, wait, gee, what happens?
And unfortunately, we're in the same position here because this is season 1, episode 6. So we're jumping ahead 4 episodes, and this one is called Starbright Part 1. So this is also going to be a cliffhanger, and we won't get to see what happened. But, I mean, if you're curious, I can dig up the future episodes for, you know, next week or something if we wanted to watch them, but I'm afraid for this week.
No, I probably won't bother.
Yeah, I am kind of surprised, actually, that this show is so, it does actually have, that's another example, I guess, of what I was saying before, is it's, they put a lot of work into it and they half-assed it at the same time because shows of this era didn't usually do this. You know, you just want to be able to rerun them in any order. So it's pretty notable that Jem does have overarching storylines and it actually remembers what happened from week to week. That is actually pretty neat. Not a lot of cartoons do that. But all right, season 1, episode 6, Starbright, part 1. Oh, I don't know why they changed the theme song. I hate this second theme song. It's so lame. Where the hell did that come from? Sudden blindness subplot?
Well, that was at the beginning. Remember that little girl was sitting up on top of, practically on top of the TV?
No, I guess.
They mentioned that the... Oh, that was when Jem was flipping back and forth.
Oh, yeah, right. It feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, and she had to flip back so she could find out that they were concerned about that little girl, and so she... Somebody, the housekeeper or whatever, was told to make an appointment for her.
Well, I definitely like the song Universal Appeal better without the episode. The episode did not add to my enjoyment, but at least now I know where it came from. And I guess we got to see what happened, so... Because, yeah, I am surprised that there's such a strong continuity in the plot. But, so Jem won the contest and then additionally won a spot in a movie. But apparently Pazzaz's dad is so famous, or not famous, so rich, that he can buy a whole movie studio. So they buy the movie studio that's making Jem's movie and then cause so much trouble that Jem walks off the set. Dun, dun, dun. And like, I mean, the first episode we watched, it was ridiculous that it had so many explosions and stuff. But I did kind of prefer that because this one was just people sniping at each other and just being little dickheads. And it's like, man, nothing is happening. Like, this is not great.
The only thing we found out is that the lead girl from the, because I don't know that we knew this before, the lead girl from the Misfits is, her family is extremely wealthy.
Yeah, and I suppose, let me spoil you on the overall plot of Jem that I noticed while I was researching stuff. Is they do a kind of interesting thing in season 3. They bring in a new band, and instead of it being Girl Versus Girl, the new band, it's this handsome German guy who runs that band, who fronts that band. So it kind of changes the dynamic, because instead of just fighting all the time with the opposing band, now Jerrica doesn't know how she feels because this handsome German man is so handsome. But at the same time, he's evil and stuff. So the Misfits and the Holograms have to team up to fight the new evil band. I can't remember what they're called, the Stingers or something. And then through their new combined thing, Jem helps Pizzazz of the Misfits reconcile with her dad and become closer than ever. So the power of Jem's goodness makes Pizzazz and her dad get along, and presumably she's less of a bitch. So that's what happens ultimately in the story, is goodness prevails.
Oh my goodness, Jem is just too wonderful.
What that reminded me of, like, a lot, that episode, is there was this HBO show called Entourage that it was a pretty entertaining show, but it was very eventless, like nothing happened. And it was very similar to this, where it's one guy is a movie star and his entourage are just his friends that he grew up with. And it is just crap like this, like, hey, I got a movie, you want to hang out on the movie set? I am, doing this, I'm doing that. And it's kind of neat that Jem, I guess, 20 years earlier, did the same thing in a kid's cartoon. But yeah, that one felt pretty pedestrian, of just like, it should feel pretty cool that you're on a movie set and you're making a movie, but instead it's like schoolyard bickering is all that was for the whole stupid episode.
Yeah, it was.
Jem's song was good, though, the Jealousy song. Yeah, like, overall, not every song knocks it out of the park, but that is definitely still, like, what I remembered the most. And, I still think the songs are good. Like, there's a playlist on YouTube. You can watch every blessed song, and it's kind of worth it. They're good. But, yeah, I think that's enough of the show. I've had my fill of Jem. My curiosity is sated, and yeah, it's just, it's a dumb kid show. What did I think was going to happen?
But it's like even the best music in it is ones that show an unsavory side of human nature, like the Jealousy song, for example. Even the Universal song, Eclipse Universal song, even that, it's great to feel good about yourself, but there's a point when you can kind of get too big, feel too good. But those are the best songs, the ones that show this side of human nature that's a little bit, not so great.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas the Honey Dream song was just so wonderful.
Yeah, and it's the best example of that side of the show. So yeah, the other ones are only worse versions of that. So yeah, it is safe to say most of the Jem songs, they can be a little rough. But that is true what you're saying, because the other song I almost threw in here, but I thought we had enough songs. The runner-up song I was going to play for Jem, it's a song called Love Is Doing It To Me. And it's basically this whole thing about, Rio is dating Jerrica, but he maybe likes Jem also, and he doesn't know that they're the same people and blah, blah, blah. And, it's causing Jerrica a lot of problems. But it is like one of the more severe Jem songs, where she's like losing her mind because of her romance problems, and love is doing it to me, yeah. So even on Jem's side, you're right, like those, the hard times make good songs. Why all the confusion, all these questions in my mind, only one conclusion I can find. Love is doing it to me, yeah. Love is doing it to me, love is doing it. Doing it. Why am I so keyed up, caught in the game of making pretend? Is this just the lead up, just the lead up to the end? Love is doing it to me, yeah. Love is doing it to me, love is doing it. Doing it. Love gets you going at the start, then it grows and makes you lose your heart, and then you fall apart. Love is doing it to me, yeah. Love is doing it to me, love is doing it. Doing it. Love is doing it to me, yeah. Love is doing it to me, love is doing it. Yeah, I know, they get so bad. Like, I don't think the Rah-Rah America stuff was very big in the 80s. And as a Canadian, I extra don't give a crap about that stuff. But I don't think those really hit till like the third season toward the end. But there's like at least two of them. And man, even though these songs are like a minute and 20 seconds, they were hard to sit through. It's like, you know, I'm proud to say I'm American because I'm free, you know. It's just that type of shit, but with Jem singing it. Brutal. But anyway, so there we go. There's this week's a little adventure. And I thought, just to finish it off, I thought this, because I found this and I thought this was kind of cool. Since Universal Appeal is so cool and it's clearly the best song, I found a French version of it. And not only French, but as I was listening to it, like even though I went to French school as a kid, I do find France French. You know, it's pretty hard to follow. So I was surprised when I heard this song. It's called The Universe at My Feet, L'Univers à mes pieds. And I was like, wow, I can understand this like perfectly. So I looked into it and it's because it's French Canadian. This is a dub they did of Jem in Quebec. So just to finish things off, that's the final file. Let's just watch Universal Appeal one more time, but in French Canadian form.
Alrighty.
Une éclipse totale, la lune envahit le soleil. Une éclipse totale, tu ne fais pas le poids et tu perdras le combat. Tant pis pour toi, car moi j'ai l'univers à mes pieds. Plus grande star de la galaxie. L'univers à mes pieds. L'univers à mes pieds. L'univers à mes pieds. L'univers à mes pieds. Là-haut dans le ciel, je suis la lumière. Un rayon laser dans la stratosphère. Sans fausse pudeur, sans avoir peur, je suis la meilleure. Car moi j'ai à mes pieds. L'univers à mes pieds.
Yeah, it's kind of nice of listening to it in a foreign language. Kind of gives it a whole different flair.
It's kind of neat, too. Yeah, just how they can't, you know, Universal Appeal doesn't translate, so they have to do Universe at My Feet. But it's like, hey, that's actually kind of cooler. It's better. It's interesting, too, if I ever do go to France. Like, it is interesting that it's the same language, but that is undeniably easier for me to understand. It's like, oh, yeah, I really, French Canadian is different from France French. So, but yeah, they didn't translate every song, so those are pretty rare, but there's like some Portuguese ones and some Spanish ones, and yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, I don't think I'll go out of my way to watch more Jem and the Holograms, but it was nice actually, to watch these.
And they did a movie in like 2015, but it took out all the sci-fi stuff, and apparently everyone hated it, so yeah. So never mind, we're good. We're good. But the songs live on. The songs are still cool. I am a giant.